Obviously been a rough month and a rough stretch here, these 13 straight games. A, how badly do your guys need the day off tomorrow, and what do you hope they take out of it?
Yeah, it's frustrating, and we are all frustrated, obviously. We're not going to lie. We're better than that, and they know that. You know, it's a tough stretch, but we got to be better. You know, it starts with me. You know, we believe in those guys. Off day tomorrow, and then we got another good team coming into town, you know, and the Brewers, they're playing well. So we got to bring our best game. You know, like I said, continue to support the guys, but obviously we're not happy about it.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, June the 30th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G. Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, Talking Mets, no G. And don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. Come to you on this day off, a very disappointing weekend. Probably the most disappointing weekend we've seen to date. And that says a lot. Over the last 3 weeks, Mets get outscored 30-4 by the Pirates. Last place Pirates and limp back home, have a day off, and a lot of soul searching. And between now and the All-Star break, the Mets have to figure out a way to get this thing righted and stabilized, or else we're going to be having a much different conversation come to the July 31st deadline. A lot of baseball to be played before then. And, you know, you're just going to hear from me today. And what I'm going to do is really just lay out a little bit of context to everything. And there's not much you could put out that's good here or rationalize what you've seen from the Mets over the past 3 weeks. It's very shocking in some ways. In other ways, it's probably a very big regression that was coming for a while. And it just happened all at once, and it's like a tidal wave. I'm not going to get into specific names and dive deep into names because I still feel like there's so much fluidity to who's available, who's a buyer, who's a seller. Back in the day, it used to be really easy. You go out at the deadline and you had a pretty good idea who was a buyer and who was a seller. Now teams buy and sell at the same time. Payroll and money come into play. The three wild cards create all sorts of complexities where it's almost a fool's errand for me to sit here and say, okay, these are the five players or the three players that the Mets should target, because who knows if they're even available. So we'll get to that in the second part of the show. But if you are coming here this morning expecting me to get deep into player meetings, firing hitting coaches, firing the manager, all these, a missive from Steve Cohen through the media, like what George Steinbrenner used to do back in the day. If those are the kind of things you're looking for this morning, and if I don't give them to you, you're going to be angry, well, then just turn it off now, because none of that matters. The team meeting after the game on Saturday, I didn't think had any impact. I didn't expect anything. Win, lose, or draw, I didn't expect anything. I think there's a lot of window dressing. I think the one last year, and everybody's trying to compare the one last year before the OMG Grimace run, was way different. And the organization's way different 12 months later. At that point, there was a heavy yoke around those guys' neck. At that point, they needed to clear the air. At that point, they were staring into the abyss. Now, you may say, oh, well, they are now. They've lost, what, 15 of 18, and they're in a free fall. They've lost, you know, what, 7 or 8 games of the standings between the wild card and the division, and that's correct. But the organization is not where they were a year ago. They don't have all this negative media attention, maybe yet. They're not coming in with a new regime and failures of the prior two or three regimes and the yoke and all the things that we talked about for years on this show. There is a lot of those guys in that room that were feeling the burden of playing in New York. I do not think that's what's going on now. Way different scenario. So the team meeting, that's for them if they needed it to just kind of make themselves feel a little bit more focused or clear the air about some bad play. So be it. And firing Eric Chavez. Look, Eric Chavez didn't give up 30 runs in the series. I mean, the Pirates average is 10 runs a game. Even if the Mets hit at their normal level, 5 or 6 runs a game, they were going to lose all three of those games. And they were going to be, you're going to feel just as lousy, just as ugly. Really. I mean, look, Mitch Keller, a name that'll come up later in the show. No shame in being shut down by him. The rest of the guys this weekend, I mean, they have a couple of good bullpen arms, of course. That's a little bit more debatable. But this is not about firing anybody. This is not about knee-jerk reaction. And look, it's really not about going down or up to Syracuse. We always talk about that. And picking out McClain or doing something radical like bringing up Jonah Tong, which isn't going to happen. Brandon Sproat, any of these big names, any of these prospect names that you know that somehow you think come to the big leagues and will have a magical, all of a sudden become Jacob DeGrom. You know, what you saw out of DeGrom and Harvey and Syndergaard, about a little over a decade ago. That's special. That doesn't happen normally. And believe me, I lived it. I wasn't expecting that either. Really. At that point, you were hoping that some of those guys, when they first got brought up, could help you with a porous bullpen. And all of a sudden, they go out. You know, DeGrom shuts down the Yankees, and away we go. And maybe that'll be on the docket. Maybe that's something, that, especially with McClain, that's coming. But, you know, that's not the panacea. When we, right around Memorial Day, when we kind of said, okay, now we know what this team is all about, how it was built, and, you know, you saw some of the dynamic of how it was built, especially how heavy bullpen-centric it was, and how, you know, potentially with some of the young kids not performing, how they may need a bat to lengthen the lineup. And, you know, you knew the starting pitching could maybe afford to have an injury, but to have three arms go down in a matter of 3 weeks, most teams couldn't, you know, handle that. But going into this phase of the season, what does this team need? We knew there were clear things they needed. You knew there were things they would need to address the deadline. The hope that it wouldn't be a plethora of things, that some of the solutions would come internally because they had some starting pitching arms coming in. You know, you weren't anticipating the amount of injuries you had. You were hoping that, yeah, they're going to need a bullpen arm or two, but maybe some of the internal options would step up and put themselves in a role where they're a solution. And I think the real hope was that as bad as Vientos and Alvarez and Beatty and then Mauricio have started here with this season, you are hoping that, you know what, they're just going to find their way for a variety of reasons. They're off to bad starts. They're struggling. Sophomore jinx, injuries, delayed spring training, whatever. Whatever you want to, you know, put in there and talk about. Acuna, I could throw that in there too. And here we are, July 1st, the end of June. June swoon. Mets got off to a rocking hard start in June. I was in the building after the David Peterson complete game. Just a day later, Kodai Senga is cruising. And really, ever since Kodai Senga in the sixth inning of that ball game against the Nats went down with a hamstring, it's almost like the kismet has gotten thrown off here at Citi Field. And the only way it's going to get better is if they play better and they play through it. And I think that's the concern now, because as you look at the roster and you want to yell about firing people in meetings and all this other magic stuff that, you know, sometimes comes into play, but more than likely is just talk for us, and I don't want to really participate in it. The problem I see is that unless the needs of this team are addressed, and they're plentiful now, I don't think you're going to get much better than a wild card muck type of team, and that's what you have right now, a team that's in the muck with every other, you know, team in the wild card. Even though they're only a game and a half out of first, they're playing like an in-the-muck team. And in-the-muck teams one day are in the playoffs, the next day they're not. And if they go on a 5-game losing streak, there's a hurt There's a whole world of hurt on them. They are at a very critical point of the season right now. Another bad week, another 5 out of 6 losses, another stretch of losing 8 or 9 out of 14 or 8 or 9 out of 12. You know, you put yourself in a position where you got yourself a ton of work in August and September, and the likelihood of making the postseason becomes in question. And I can't believe we're saying this just 3 weeks after that fantastic City Field vibe against the Nats. But that's where they're at. So forgetting all that other magic beans and pixie dust about meetings, the real issue is that the problems you have in front of you, that you thought you had some solutions between now and the trade deadline, you have no solutions. I do not believe you have enough of a solution with the starting pitching, even with potentially Manaea coming back and maybe with a young pitcher like a McClain. I think you're going to need another arm. And what that arm is, whether it's a upper echelon ace or a diamond in the rough or just a dirty old dish rag league average that gives you 6 innings, 3 runs, you're going to need another arm. You're going to need another arm. You're going to need multiple bullpen arms. You do not have solutions here in the bullpen. Okay, Huascar Brazenban is not a solution. Okay, this is the second year in a row he's failed when they needed him. And when I heard the booth talk about how one of the biggest things he struggles with is confidence, well, that pretty much signed, sealed, and delivered for me the fact that Brazenban is not a high leverage answer. Reed Garrett, whether it's injury, overuse, the bright lights of the big spot, which I had questions about last year, if you remember, he's not a high leverage bridge. He's different today. Now he has to be, but I don't think he is. I thought he'd be a breakout candidate, and certainly he's a good piece, but he's not a piece that you could rely on consistently in a big spot. Ryan Stanek, you know, way too straight of a fastball, not a high leverage eighth inning reliever on a championship team. And Jose Buto, maybe. But, you know what comes with that, with recovery time and walks and things of that. You know, right now you have one high-leverage championship piece out of that bullpen, and that's Edwin Diaz. And then you have guys that have failed you, disappointed and failed you. You have a ton of 4A shuttling. I don't see any solutions here in that bullpen. That bullpen might need three arms. A lefty, you know, a high-leverage second closer, maybe another arm. I mean, a complete overhaul. A complete overhaul. Like they did last year, but more so. The rotation, you know, that is just unfortunate and bad luck. What's most aggravating, I think, that here we are as we head into July and the trade deadline a month away, is that you talk about, you hype, you endlessly discussed, and in some ways are deathly afraid to trade because you're afraid of what you see in Chicago with Pete Carl Armstrong will happen to the guys that you give away. But the fact that every single Mets positional prospect and then the established young one in Vientos has had an awful year. An awful year. Now, Beatty's coming around a little bit. A little bit. But he's not been good. And Acuna's in the minor leagues. And we know the deal with Alvarez. He's got a couple of hits now. He's starting to heat up in AAA. Nothing he does stat-wise in AAA will matter. Until the Mets say he's ready and they bring him back and you see results in the big leagues, nothing matters. Because we saw this with Beatty. And you want to give Mauricio a bit of a pass because he's been out so long, fine. But he looks like a guy that can only hit a fastball or hit 4A-type pitching, which you saw this week when he faced a 4A type with Atlanta. And then all of a sudden he goes and faces some quality pitching in Pittsburgh and nothing. So, you know, you're going to need a bat at third base. You know, Vientos doesn't look like, since he returned from AAA and his injury, he's any better. You might need a bat at third base. You might need maybe that bat is Jesse Winker. He's on a rehab assignment, so he's maybe on the way. So maybe there is some internal options. And out of the three things that the Mets have to fill, and that's a lot, you might have to ride it out with some of these positional players because, let's face it, you might not have the prospect capital or even the payroll. I mean, if Cohen, anything that Cohen approves, the Mets bring in $40 million, it's like bringing in $80 million because of the tax. Now, it's prorated over half a year and whatnot. And maybe you send some salary out if you can to offset whatever you do. But what now they are asked to do, you know, the front office and Cohen, they're asked to take on a lot more salary, potentially give up damaging prospect capital, and to do this for a team that just 3 weeks ago had the best record in baseball. It's frustrating. I'm frustrated too. But that's where you're at. This has nothing to do with a team meeting or a hitting coach or all this other garbage that goes on X. This has to do with the roster right now is deficient. And you could say, well, that's on David Stearns. And sure it is. But as, you know, a big market president of baseball operations, I mean, Stearns can't go out and mitigate every single young prospect not having an acceptable league average component player year. I mean, think about it. All you need out of those guys is be a surrounding of the core component player and figure yourself out to become who you are. You're not expecting them all to become David Wright and Jose Reyes. But geez, they're not even Thyro Estrada at some point. They're not even acceptable backup. They're, you know, don't, you know, give me league average or before Alex Baum became a run producer. Give me that, Brett Beatty. He's not even giving you that. I mean, they are bad 4A players, most of these guys right now. You know, you can't project that if you're David Stearns. The bullpen, you want to kill him for not getting another high-leverage arm. He did in Minter. He got hurt. And I really can't kill him for the rotation because, you know, you've seen the big names, the Burnses, the Snells, the guys that were available. They've gone down. I think the way he's approaching it is correct. I think it's dangerous because as you get hurt and there's injuries, you start to get to the point where, you know, a collection of very good comes down to a lot less of very good and then has to be replaced with not so very good, which is what you're seeing now. And when you put in pitchers like that that really can't go deep in the game, the bullpen becomes that much more important. And that's why I think some of the, and you want to blame Stearns, that's fine, but a lot of this now is years of inadequate player development that they have just started to maybe put a plan in place the last 12 to 18 months, rearing its head. And that, you know, that's, this is part of the challenge of where the Mets are, winning and re-engaging, re-engineering an organization. They've been doing it since 2020, and a lot of the starts and stops because of the difference in leadership has finally caught up to them. So this is the situation they're in. Now, this was the situation a year ago. I think they're in a better place than they were a year ago. But last year, they got hot. OMG, grimace this. And let's face it, I think the reaction of the fan base, too, has been that for almost a calendar year, from June of last year to now, this team had the most wins in baseball, had very few bad stretches, was nothing but good vibes, even in the offseason. And now you've hit your first bad stretch. And look, as bad as they were the last 3 weeks of June, they're only three games under 500 in June. At the end of the year, if you just took a snapshot of month by month by month by month, and they make the playoffs, you can be like, oh, well, that's their bad month. Every team is going to have something like that, where they're not as good. And did I believe they were a 100-win team? Nah, I never really believed they're at that level. That's a very high level to stay at. But I thought they were a team that could win 95 games. They're not right now. And I don't think they have the pieces right now. They have to go out and get those pieces. Can they win 90 to 92 games and is that going to be enough for the division? I don't know. Maybe. Probably not. Is that enough for a wild card? Sure. I don't think the wild cards are going to play at a high, high level. They start falling to the 85 to 88 win range, then you're in the muck and you have a real serious problem, which is where they possibly can be at. So the reality is this. They're not good enough. All the questions we had going into June were answered negatively. The bullpen's not good enough. The kids are not ready yet, nor maybe they'll never be. And the one fear we had, which is the pitching, the starting pitching getting injured and regressing, it all happened. And even with regression, if they had a healthy Senga, they had a healthy Griffin Canning, you know, even with McGill, I think you would have saw more competitive, competent starts. One of the biggest things I think that's very concerning, even on top of all that, is how they're playing on the road. I mean, they're an awful road team. They're 19-25 away from home, and they've been largely uncompetitive the last 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, games are over by the third inning. You are, even if you right the ship and make the playoffs, you're going to have to win games on the road in hostile environments. They did it last year. Milwaukee, Philadelphia, they had to get one in L.A. So that's got to change. And that, you know, some of that is the players that are in that clubhouse. So what's funny is that we spent a good portion of the first 2 months talking about Juan Soto and Juan Soto's mom's clothing allowance and fighting with Michael Kay and wearing all sorts of stupid nonsense, you know, firing hitting coaches, when the real problems are real and deep. And it's really stuff that the organization has to look in the mirror. Why is every one of these young players not good? Is that the hitting coach? I can't imagine it's just the hitting coach. It's not. Because they're bad on the defensive side, too. There's no progress there. We're still not at the point where the Mets can competently piece together a bullpen internally without shuttling a bunch of 4A guys. And the starting pitching, well, you know, you want to get to the point where you don't have to chase Corbin Burns and Blake Snell. You got to develop some of your own guys. Not all of them have to be Matt Harvey and Jacob deGrom. But some of them have to be, you know, a low-cost version of what Griffin Canning was giving you. Or, you know, what Holmes is giving you. You know, really solid number three type starter performance. And what's interesting is that outside of Pete Carroll Armstrong, I mean, what Met prospect over the last 10 years even has left the organization that you look at and say, wow, that's a guy that consistently has been, you know, a contributor. And I'm not talking about DeGrom, who's in Texas, and, you know, Steven Matz, of course, in St. Louis, still hanging in there. Those guys are way back. I'm talking about in the last 5, 6, 7 years since Sandy Alderson left the first time. Not much. Not much there. So, anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, now we complain, we whined, we laid out the reality. What are the solutions, and how can the Mets go about getting some of these problems solved? It's not going to happen today. It may take until the end of July. The concern I have is how are they going to keep this thing together until the end of July? I mean, they have some reinforcements potentially coming, but it's going to be hard. Because those things I told you that are not working, I don't see them getting better. I don't. So I think they're going to have to figure it out and piece this together. I think there's going to be more agita over the next few weeks. But the way they approach the deadline and the type of players they could go get, that'll be interesting. And I have a way of breaking it down a little bit differently to organize it because it can get chaotic. You're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this.
Here's the 0-2 from Alcantara to Goodman. And he got him swinging on a heater at 90. Now the 2-2. It's cut on it. Miss. Blew a sinker.
Put him away.
Again the 3-2. Cut on it. Miss. Strike three. Payoff. Swing and a miss.
He doesn't really go for strikeouts. He likes contact on the ground.
2-2. Swing and a miss.
In a big league game.
2-2, swung on it, missed, strike three, Torrens 19th. There's a swing and a miss, strike three, and I doubt Sandy Alcantara realizes it, but that is a big strikeout in Marlins franchise history.
All right, we're back. So how do you fix this? I just laid out kind of a bleak situation. All the areas of the team going into the, you know, what do we need phase, a phase where you know you have a good team, you know you have a playoff bound team or a division winning team or maybe a championship level team, and you just know they need reinforcements to maybe get to that next level or solidify their position. And we felt going into this phase here at the Talking Mets podcast that, yes, the Mets had some issues, and maybe there were some questions about the sustainability of some of the good stuff that happened, but nothing that was, you know, 911 emergency that can't be navigated until the deadline, so that the Mets can figure this out, not put themselves in a position where they have to overpay or put themselves in a crisis position where they lose a lot of leverage. That's all gone. The last 3 weeks have put that to bed, the idea that the Mets can effectively navigate it. I think they are in a crisis because I think they're seeing they don't have a lot of internal options. And maybe they feel that eventually these internal options will blossom. I just don't see that that's going to happen in the next 30 days. Nor do I feel going forward, if you're David Stearns, that you could look at some of these, especially on the positional side kids, and look at them as options for the future. You have to question whether or not they're a competent option at all. And that, yes, that includes Alvarez. I know that you guys don't like hearing that. That includes Alvarez. That includes Vientos. All those guys. And who knows? They may not be here past the 31st. Don't put it past. Because here's the real challenge you have. You don't know who's going to be a seller with the three wild card scenario. There are not that many surefire sellers right now. Pittsburgh, Colorado, Washington, you could probably put in there. In the American League, the White Sox, the A's, you know, maybe the Orioles, I don't think. Everybody else is kind of hanging around. Now, they're hanging around a wild card spot. They're hanging around a weak division, whatever. Now, this could change in a week. By this time next week, one of these teams could have lost six or seven in a row, and you're going to say, okay, they're trending the other way. You know, you got teams that resemble the 2023 Mets who are kind of like, they're one run away from, like, busting through. That's Boston and, you know, Minnesota, teams like that. Could they fall back? And in reality, Boston, Minnesota, as I looked up and down the league, have a ton of solutions to the Mets' problems. So if you could pick apart those rosters, even better if you're the Mets. But you don't know right now. And with the other part, I think you have to remember, as, you know, we talk about improving the team, is, you think there's a lot of owners that don't want to see Steve Cohen be successful. They don't want to hear that David Stearns and the pitching lab and how smart the Mets are. They don't want to see that. They're not going to want to help the Mets. And if their front office helps the Mets, they're going to have to pay a premium, the Mets. They're going to have to pay another tax. No, not the Cohen tax for payroll. They're going to be paying another tax, which is the tax for doing business. So this is a tough spot. This is, you know, what really is the thing that everybody should be talking about is not hitting coaches and team meetings and Soto, whether he's happy and taking pictures after a home run in the dugout. All the nonsense that you guys have been talking about for 2.5, 3 freaking months, including the media, and they'll talk about it today. The real discussion here is they do not have a pipeline to fill anything. Anything. They can't fill middle relief. They can't get spot starts. They can't get league average out of their freaking top 15 prospects at any position. Do you understand that? Third base, behind the plate. For Christ's sake, Beatty's been asked to be a backup infielder that could play second and third and bounce around the infield. Could do that. I mean, he's hitting a little bit more. Maybe I should be a little hard. We're asking Mauricio to bat freaking ninth. We're not asking any of these guys to come in and be middle of the order hitters. They can't give you league average. That's the issue. Now, going forward, this is Stearns' job to fix it. So it's on him, but he's also a little over a year into this. We're starting to get to the point where, you know, you want to see how, and there is a lot of good things happening in the farm. We had Ernie Dove on last week to talk about it. So now you got to go out and acquire it, and it's hard to acquire it on the pitching side, on the bullpen side, on the positional side. Now, could you go out and get yourself? You know, I brought up Ryan McMahon, and I started talking about this over at Beyond the Mic. You know, Ryan McMahon or Thyra Estrada from Colorado is kind of like a corner bat, you know, backup, somebody who could help. You could do something like that. Those shouldn't be too hard. They shouldn't be too expensive to do that. You know, center field, I think that's much more complicated. You know, you have, you know, money guys. And like I said, you have Durant in Boston. You have Byron Buxton in Minnesota. You know, if those teams fall out, they have some pitching in the bullpen and potentially even a starter, which may make sense. You know, maybe that you could go there. But that's complicated. And then, you know, as far as where you go with the pitching, you know, I'll start with the starters. I mean, here's how I'm going to break it down, the type of trades. The first thing is, are the Mets going to be a team at the deadline that's willing to make a Scherzer-Verlander deal? Now, there's different types of those Scherzer-Verlander deals. Are they willing, you know, I'm talking Scherzer-Verlander before they got broken down with the Mets, the deals where Verlander went to Houston and Scherzer went to the Dodgers. You know, those are deals that potentially are going to require, even as these stars are later in their careers, some good prospect capital to go back the other way. And even when they Mets traded Verlander and Scherzer when they were at the end of the rope, they got something. They didn't get top, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but they got decent prospects. There's not that many pitchers out there that fit that mold. There's certainly not, in my opinion, a Scherzer-Verlander, vintage Scherzer-Verlander pitcher out there that's available. DeGrom would fall into that. John Heyman feels DeGrom is not an option. It'd be great to see a DeGrom reunion. That's a very complicated situation. You're taking an older pitcher, an injury-prone pitcher, a guy with a no-trade clause, a guy making a ton of money that, you know, is probably going to cost you $75 or $80 million when you double up the salary against the competitive balance tax. Sandy Alcantara, much more affordable contract. But I'll tell you what, you know, I don't think it takes a genius to know Peter Bendix and the Marlins don't have a lot of assets. They'd be trading him within the division. You think that this is going to be cheap? And here's the other thing. He's still got 2 years left on his deal. I know there's a team option, one of them, which either he'll pick up. I mean, this guy's making $17 million this year, makes $17 next year, $21. That's a steal. That's a steal. I mean, league average garbage is making 15. You think that they're just going to give him away? And by the way, because they got control, they don't have to trade him this year. If this is a transition year, you know, he started to pitch well. He had a setback yesterday. They don't have to trade him if the price is not right. You have no leverage there. Mets need to acquire Alcantara more than the Marlins need currently right now to trade him. Unless they feel that they need to get this thing in the right way with a plethora of prospects that will help them pretty much immediately. And if that's the case, you're going to have a painful trade. A trade for DeGrom may be a little less painful than a trade for Alcantara, but they're going to be painful. And then even like other type of vet acquisitions, or Seth Lugo, a Michael Wacha. You laugh about Michael Wacha. I know that someone probably snickered. Michael Wacha is a top 25 pitcher, according to Fangraphs right now. He's better than a lot of what the Mets have, and maybe every starter the Mets have, including Clay Holmes. You know, I'm going up and down the top 25 on Fangraphs in WAR. Now, some of that has to do with length. I mean, David Peterson's right outside of it, despite his recent struggles. But, you know, Michael Wacha is number 26. You know, he's hanging around the same yard as Yamamoto of L.A., Dylan Cease, you know, guys like that. You know, Merrill Kelly, big names, big names. So, I mean, that's the first type of deal, and that's going to be a painful deal. Now, there's also some very good vets that probably won't cost you as much, that are not as sexy, that I know you're going to turn your nose up at. Luis Severino got hit at Yankee Stadium yesterday. Chris Paddock. You know, maybe Walker Buehler is a little bit more than that. I know the Mets were interested in him, but maybe those are guys that either are coming off of an injury or have a ceiling of 6 innings, 3 runs. I mean, I think Buehler could be more of that, but coming off of the injury in his first full season, you know, this, you know, there might be some variability in his performance. So you could do that. That's a safer option. Might not cost you as much. Is that going to solve the problem? That will help. With Manaea coming back and Senga being back in about a month, that will help. That will probably, if you got someone, a vet like Severino, who could give you six innings, three runs. I don't think you're going to feel better about facing the Dodgers in a short series because you had him last year and he couldn't really get the Dodgers out, but it'll help you get there. It'll make you feel better that when you go into Pittsburgh on a Sunday, you won't be knocked out of a game in the second inning. So there, you know, there's another option. And then, you know, this is probably more up Stern's alley, and this won't be cheap. But then there's also the, what I call the Gerrit Cole type of deals. When the Astros acquired Gerrit Cole, a pitcher that was really good, had potential, but could get the kick into the top 10, 15 by going to a better organization. And Joe Ryan falls into that. Mitch Keller falls into that. You saw him this weekend. George Kirby in Seattle may fall into that. There's also hidden gems. I look at a Bryce Miller in Seattle, Bailey Ober, Edward Cabrera in Miami. I mean, these are all young pitchers. You know, obviously Ryan and Kirby and Keller are much more established. Then there's the next level down where guys who've had some moments, you know, those will cost less. Those might be guys that could be solutions now and going forward. I mean, you go out, you acquire Joe Ryan, a top 20 pitcher. You know, maybe the Mets lab gets him, and he's top 10, and he's an ace next year, and you got a little bit of control there. Really, you know, I said that Minnesota and Boston are good fits. I mean, Pittsburgh across the diamond have some good fits there. You know, have Keller. You've got Bednar coming out of the bullpen there. So, and then, you know, bullpen, if you go the same route that you went last year with Brazenbaum, there's plenty of guys like that across the league. You know, Jake Bird, Seth Halverson in Colorado, Calvin Fauché in Miami, Colin Schneider, Justin Sterner, Brandon Iser. These are all names that, going through some research, some names that may be available. Like, you know, all of these guys make sense for what the Mets historically have done. Are they available? You know, all these guys have control for the most part, are cost effective. You know, they're not going to be cheap. And you don't know, like, just like Brazenbaum, you don't know how they're going to perform, especially coming over at the deadline. Most of these guys in no man's land competitive situations get thrown into New York, deep end of the pool, pennant race, demanding fan base, Steve Cohen Mets. You know, you don't know how they're going to react to that. I mean, truthfully, I don't think it's more likely. Oh, let me back up. It's more likely the Mets make a Brazenbaum type of move or a Paul Blackburn type of move again at the deadline. Those are innocuous enough where you don't rip up the system. Now, how much they value this system, especially players that have been here before Stearns, I don't know. Based on the results of the current crop of prospects that Stearns inherited, they're not great. So maybe they don't care. But, you know, other teams are going to question that too. What the Mets really need is a big deal. You want to know what a big deal is? Going to Boston and getting Duran to play center. Maybe Bregman at third base. And going out and getting Aroldis Chapman. You know, maybe getting a Justin Wilson. A Garrett Whitlock. Going to Pittsburgh and getting Mitch Keller and David Bednar. And maybe another pitcher. You know, some people brought up O'Neill Cruz. I'm not really a big O'Neill Cruz guy. But, you know, you want to address the center field situation. There you go. Minnesota, Yoan Duran, Griffin Jacks, Lewis Varland. These are difference-making names out there. But they're going to cost you. I mean, it's going to be painful. And, you know, we don't know who's untouchable. Is Sproat untouchable? Is McClain untouchable? Is Benj untouchable? Eventually, when he gets called up, I'll get his name right. Benji. Who's untouchable? Ilian Pena. Who's untouchable? You're going to get a big deal. You know, look at what Juan Soto fetched for, you know, what the Nats fetched for Juan Soto. Now, I know Juan Soto's Ted Williams, so that's not maybe apples to apples. But you don't think an Alcantara will cost that? You don't think the Mets try to get Duran and or Bregman and Chapman, they're not going to get a painful return back to Boston? A team that's prided itself on building up its farm system, that's trying to win without spending a gazillion dollars. You know, Minnesota, you think they're just going to give up all these cost-controlled relievers, potentially a Joe Ryan, guys that are in reasonable contracts. You're not going to be giving up top prospects. I mean, any of these names go back, I think you're seeing a good chunk of your top five go bye-bye. Now, you have the draft coming up, so that could help the Mets decide what they can and can't give up. But you want to play it safe, which they've done. You know, you get yourself this year's Paul Blackburn, this year's Huascar Brazaman, more effective, of course. But those guys were, you know, Blackburn was actually fairly effective before he got hurt last year. Guys that you anticipate being adequate, you know, maybe in Brazaman, he's a bit of a lottery ticket. You thought maybe between the lab and a bunch of other development situations that he would come around. You know, you could do that, but you're in the same spot. There's a lot of variability with that. And let me tell you something. If you don't provide the reinforcements that we have outlined in this on this show, and we've talked about now for the better part of a month, I just don't know what the second half of this season looks like. I'm not saying this is the 2023 team. That's a totally different situation. I think you can be in for a much harder battle to make the playoffs than you think. And certainly, I don't think they could compete with the Dodgers in a short series. And I'm not sure they could compete or they would be favored to beat anybody in a short series without the reinforcements that we talked about at all. So, you know, that to me is where you're at. And it's a sobering thought. And what's frustrating is that you have components of the organization in front of you that you've trusted and tried to develop and put faith in. And they've not only come up short, they've come up obnoxiously short. I mean, the fact that we're even talking about having to plug in on the offensive side in a manner where you have to go out and get a Bregman, in the manner that you have to go out and potentially, I mean, center field, maybe, you know, that's been a different situation. I mean, they focus on defense. The fact that you're starting at least once or twice a week a catcher that was an organizational filler a year ago, when your top 100, top overall prospect can't get out of his own way, those are indicting scenarios. Now, some of that's indicting on the Mets and their development. I am not here to boil it down to just Eric Chavez. That is foolish. What everybody complaining about Chavez. Eric Chavez doesn't have that kind of power. No hitting coach has that power and sway to destroy multiple prospects. That has to do with the organization development. That has to do with drafting. Because you don't know their makeup. When I hear that Brazaman's confidence is an issue, right away to me, that eliminates so much expectation. Like, to me, that's why it's a bit foolish for them to even have thought that as the lights got brighter, that he was a solution. And I think maybe Reed Garrett might fall into that. Now, I don't have info on that, just the vibe I get. So, you know, I mean, what are they going to do? There's a couple of ways. Chips to the center of the table, painful. Big-time deal. You know what a big-time deal looks like? Getting Mitch Keller and David Bednar from Pittsburgh. Getting Johan Duran, another reliever, and maybe Buxton from Minnesota. Getting Bregman and or Duran and Chapman and maybe another reliever from Boston. Those are big-time deals. You know, maybe get those teams would solve many different needs rather than going here for that. You know, you want to go out and get Ryan Helsley from St. Louis if they fall out of it. Maybe you have to take on Arenado's contract on that. I don't know. For lesser prospect capital, that could be out there. You know, there's a lot of different ways. I mean, if you go out, you tell me right now, the Mets absolutely have to upgrade the bullpen. At the very least, they have to do that. Because they're not, I mean, assuming that even the starter they bring in, they're not going and getting a Joe Ryan or a George Kirby or player like that. So you're going to be stuck with a bunch of six-inning starters. You're going to need a lot of bullpen. If you told me they can't get the position player impact level, it's going to cost them too much to bring in a Bregman, a Duran, a Buxton, a guy like that, and they'd have to ride what they got, I think they can, but then I think you really need to upgrade the pitching. at the very least at that point, get some veteran depth. A guy that could, a Juan Uribe type. You know, think about what the Mets did in 2015 with Juan Uribe. That kind of guy. You know, maybe that guy's out there. A guy that is pretty good, really isn't a starter, but, you know, in the right spot could be a component starter on the team. Maybe that's, Kelly Johnson type. You know, maybe there's those kind of deals. I mean, those can be. But I think they need an impact. They need to really look at impact. And maybe, I don't know if Stearns has to be sold. You know, I think part of investing, especially investing in the prospect capital, will be what he sees over the next 30 days. I can't imagine the Mets are this below 500 group, 62 Mets group that we've seen the last 3 weeks. Maybe they weren't the 24 games over 500 best team in baseball group. If you land in between, you should be landing at what I think they are, 90 to 93 wins. And that is still a solid team, and a team with the proper reinforcements can win in the tournament. Now, if you're telling me that the swing here is more who they are than the other swing, which I have a hard time believing, but okay, let's play, that's different. That's a much harder conversation about investing in the club. Here's what I do know. The next 30 days will be painful. It will be painful navigating some of the games until the All-Star break while they try to figure out how to get healthy and how to get reinforcements in here. I think the deadline will be painful if they do a chips to the center of the table type of move. You're going to see prospects go the other way that people are not going to be happy about. And that's what comes with winning a championship, a lot of pain. Pain on trades. If a trade is good for both sides, there's pain. Look at San Diego. You know what the Mets really need to do? They need to channel their inner A.J. Preller. They need to go out, and just like he got, Tanner Scott and Justin Adams, Jason Adams and these guys, for the bullpen, they need to do that. They need to have their version of that. They need to go out at the deadline and say, you know what, I have a good team, but a team with holes. Let me put my chips to the center of the table. They need to channel, Stearns needs to channel his inner A.J. Preller. Now, if he doesn't, does that mean all hope is lost? No. But then you're in the muck team and you're a Francisco home run, or Lindor home run away from being in the playoffs or being out of the playoffs. And, there's nothing wrong with that, especially if you have a grander plan to say, hey, it's not worth ripping apart my system for a win now. But as you can see, with the kids, with the Alvarezes, with the Beatties, with guys that just 2 or 3 years ago in 2022, you would never think of letting go. You don't know what you have until it's in front of you. And if it's not good or not what you think, you may regret not putting those chips to the center of the table. I do not envy David Stearns over the next 30 days. These are tough, tough decisions. He's been put in a tough spot taking this job. That's why he makes a lot of money. He's handled it well to date. This is a true test for Stearns. This is his first real true test in a Mets uniform. He stayed the course since he got here. He's confidently said from day one, we're a team that can build and contend. He didn't waver last year even before the Grimace run. Now, this is the first time since Grimace that the team's showing some cracks. I don't know if he'll talk to the media today. Probably not. Probably tomorrow. But it'll be interesting to see what, today's an off day. You never know what comes of an off day. Maybe the moves come. I have a feeling some moves will come, probably internally, but maybe the moves will come. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this off day edition of the Talking Mets podcast. Of course, the Subway Series next week. So stay tuned. Some Subway Series round two. I'm sure there'll be more trade talk, plenty more Mets talk. Continue to go over to TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G for the latest. And of course, subscribe to my Substack. Less than $5 a month, less than a cup of coffee a month. Plenty of free promotions. So stick around for more content throughout the week. Of course, as I said, you can check me out all the time at the TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG. And don't forget the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks on the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your week. Have a great 4th of July coming up. Until then, until our next show, take care, everybody.